This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and alongside me is Hezril Ashraf.
So February 23rd, that's going to be a date that'll go into the history books when the political event known as Lanka Sheraton caused the fall of the former Pakatan Harapan government, right? And it was, of course, the starting point for today's Perikatan National Government. And today actually marks exactly a year since Lanka Sheraton happened.
Yeah, that's right. And I think for most of us can agree that it was a shocking move, to say the least, right? I mean, one second, it's any ordinary day, and the next thing you know, you're reading reports and hearing rumblings about, you know, secret meetings and the potential fall of Pakatan Harapan government. And at first, it was so difficult to process the going-ons, right? You know, because there was just so much. And because we've also never experienced the change of government outside of elections. So I didn't even think it was possible to begin with. But before you know it, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, for sure. And while everyone can agree on its significance, you know, I think many people view it differently. You know, some, for instance, have called it a dark day for Malaysian democracy, while many others saw it as inevitable almost. A solution even to the growing divide between former Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad and his designated successor, Datuk Sri Anwar Ibrahim. But we've been asking ourselves, how do youth leaders from both sides of the political divide look back on that day, you know, especially since they had no formal legislative role to play? And joining us to share their perspectives are Datuk Dr. Ashraf Wajdi Dusuki, UMNO Youth Chief, and Howard Lee, Para Assemblyperson for Pasir Pinji, and DAP Youth Chief. Dr. Ashraf, YB Howard, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
So let's start with you, Dr. Ashraf. You know, it's been a year since Lanka Sheraton, and it wouldn't have been possible without UMNO's support for Bersatu. Take us back to last year and to the weeks leading up to it. Were you aware that UMNO intended to form a new government with Bersatu? What was happening behind the scenes from your perspective?
Actually, in the beginning, we were not aware about the so-called Lanka Sheraton because I still remember prior to the event, UMNO in particular and BN in general were still enjoying our sweet win in several by-elections. Actually, the most recent one before that, prior to that Lanka Sheraton, was Tanjung Piai and Kimanis.
Right, yep.
So actually, we have to be very clear today that the move was started not because of UMNO or Barisan Nasional, but due to the internal rift amongst PH leadership. It is an open secret that the rivalry and clash on who should be the Prime Minister between Tun Mahathir and Datuk Sri Anwar Ibrahim. I have strong belief that this move is a result of the heightened clash between the two senior politicians. Was Tun Mahathir's resignation and subsequently bring to the collapse of PH government made the move come to existence. For me, as a youth leader, UMNO youth leader, in the beginning, I was quite, I'm very much reserved to such a move.
And why were you reserved?
Because in the beginning, as you have might recall, in two consecutive years, in my speech at the General Assembly, I did mention that whatever it is, the youth in particular are against any attempt to form a government through a backdoor. So that was our position before and until today.
And YB Howard, were you aware of any attempts to form a new government prior to Lanka Sheraton? I mean, how did you feel when you found out this was happening?
Thanks for inviting. Hi, Ashraf. I think there are two sides to it. Number one, it was a surprise. And yes, we were caught off guard, so off guard that the government collapsed. But I think the surprise part didn't actually come with a shock per se. And I think we need to be able to put it into context, actually. I mean, the reality was those who were given the mandate to serve were set upon this kind of, I'd even use the word impossible task of delivering sky-high expectations. You know, it's reversing decades of rot. Itself was hard enough. It was made even harder by you know, the lost opportunities and lost socioeconomic progress that we had to make up for. And restraints of responsibilities. I would even say the prison of power, because power is overbearingly pressuring, and the impossible gravity of challenges deny the diligence of our credit per se. But anyway, put all that aside, it was a surprise that, you know, things happened the way it did. And the only thing that I would say is I may have to set the record straight on what Ashraf had to say. Overly simplistic to say that it was purely, simply and solely to do with the rift between Tun and Dato' Anwar. Because at the end of the day, the trigger was pulled by, you know, extra parliamentary machinations with defections, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't think I can agree that it was purely and simply because of that rift. And if it wasn't for UMNO's support, yeah. And quite frankly, let me put one example. On the eve of Lanka Sheraton, Majlis President Pakatan Harapan actually convened and actually sorted out, and there was an agreement. But still, certain parties still decided to go ahead with whatever that they planned under the nose and actually slammed in the face of Pakatan Harapan and Tun at that time. And I think all these is in public record. So I'd like to disagree slightly with Ashraf there. But nonetheless, we were caught surprised and off guard. And the off guard part is, I would say, we will take responsibility. We should have been more guarded, and we should have done more to avoid and avert what happened. But we didn't. And the people paid for it. Democracy in Malaysia paid for it. And Malaysia paid for it. And we're still paying for it now.
Howard, I just want to, you know, press that a little further. You touched on how, you know, Pakatan Harapan faced impossible challenges. You know, the pressure was on right from the start. But do you think a lot of it was brought upon by yourselves because Pakatan Harapan, promised a lot of things in the manifesto that wasn't realistically achievable in a short period of time?
I think that's subjective. We were just in government and in power just shy of 2 years. I think it's safer to say that we had not yet achieved some of the things that we wanted to. And I think it's on public record, the percentage of deliverance, it was in the early 60%. And I think given more time, we would have hit higher numbers in terms of what was on the manifesto. Let's set that record straight. But I think to place blame solely on that, again, is oversimplification. And based on what I just said in the previous answer, number one, we wouldn't blame a robbery on the breakable security system, because there is no house or no security system that is impenetrable. And unfortunately, in this case, it was penetrated. Would you blame the one whose house, whose security system is not impenetrable? Of course, the blame should be on those who thieved and those who robbed. So, it's difficult for me to accept that premise, really.
All right, Dr. Ashraf, so for Malaysians like YB Howard, democracy suffered that day during Lanka Sheraton. But what did that event mean to you? How did you personally feel about it? And how would you respond to people who say that Perikatan Nasional, is a backdoor government? I mean, obviously it's legal because the Yang di-Pertuan Agong has consented to the formation of the government. But if someone were to walk to you, you know, on the street and say, you know, you're a backdoor government, how would you respond?
My response is simple. His Majesty the Yang di-Pertuan Agong has made the necessary actions to stabilize the government and the country at that point in time. His Majesty acted accordingly, as enshrined by the federal constitution with advice of the constitutional experts. That actually, the fact that we must recognize and accept it by all, and we have now have a functioning government. And it was His Majesty's advice and urge for BN MPs to support Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin to break the long week of deadlock for the interests of the people in facing the pandemic, COVID-19. Now the question is it a backdoor? If it is a backdoor, as I mentioned, I will be the first one who will go against it, since it is our General Assembly's resolution. And my UMNO youth brothers And I myself categorically rejected any kind of backdoor government. But the answer is obvious. The PH government had actually collapsed as a result of Tun Mahathir's own decision to resign. Even the former Attorney General, Tommy Thomas, in his recently published book, My Story, Justice in the Wilderness, had asserted that when Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad resigned as Prime Minister on February 24th, 2020, it was an individual decision. I quote, "It was Mahathir's inexplicable and unforgivable decision to resign unilaterally that caused the collapse of the duly elected People's Harapan government." Having said that, UMNO and BN were very consistent from the very beginning, even when the collapse of PH government in February 2020, that it is pertinent to give the people back their right to elect and choose their own government. In other words, we need to get fresh mandate from the rakyat. Even at that time, I remember, we were arguing and debating that whoever becomes prime minister, it will not be a stable government since the majority was very slim. It will not be good for the economy either. Investors may not have the trust and confidence since anything can happen and it could again turn the table against them. Unfortunately, the circumstances today, especially with the pandemic situation, does not allow us to have a general election. Nevertheless, as promised by the Prime Minister, who repeatedly mentioned that GE will be called immediately as soon as the pandemic has settled down, again, we have to give back the trust and the mandate for the people to choose and elect.
So then you're saying that from the perspective of Barisan Nasional, that it was clear that it was going to be a temporary configuration, because you just said that eventually the mandate would have to be left back to the people.
Precisely. Let me share the insights of what actually happened during the week of uncertainties. Mm. We did discuss with our component parties, MCA, MIC, and PBRS. We did discuss with our new partner in Muafakat National PAS. Mm. And what we agreed after His Majesty came back to us saying that there's no clear majority, because at that point in time, there were three groups, the three blocks. One block supported Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim as the Prime Minister. Another block supported Tun Dr. Mahathir to regain his premiership. And another block, which is mainly Barisan Nasional and parties from Sarawak, agreed that we opt for dissolution of parliament. Because there is no clear mandate, we need to settle down. We have to compromise who should be the prime minister. At that time, we had our discussion at Supreme Council, right, as well as we discussed with our partners with PAS. And we agreed eventually that we need to save this country and we have to immediately form government and we have to compromise on one prime minister. And we have actually set our mind that this government is only for temporary to stabilize, and then we have to send it back to the rakyat to decide, or let rakyat to give us a fresh mandate who will be the government.
I think the issue of legitimacy, that there are two types of legitimacy that we need to consider. Number one is the constitutional and legal legitimacy, of which I think the AP and Harapan has been very consistent. It is a constitutionally and legal legitimate government, albeit being backdoor. And the reason why it is a backdoor government is the fact that it is morally illegitimate. But let's cast that aside. We speak of consistencies, and I think UMNO has been definitely consistent in rhetoric, but in terms of his action, it's not really that consistent per se, because the resolution is not to support a government or a backdoor government. And, it is supporting a backdoor government that is still in play right now, to the point that we are now in darurat, in a state of emergency. But again, we'll put that aside. But the key issue on consistency here is that right now, the state of the nation right now is in an utter mess. And it's because of these extra parliamentary machinations. And right now, there is no option for an election, and we certainly don't call for it. And UMNO has been coming out time and time again calling for an election, even at a time when it's not suitable. But I think this is where the inconsistency that I would like to point out, that, you know, the record must be set straight.
Okay.
No, I need to correct the fact.
Go ahead.
What Howard mentioned just now. UMNO called for election as soon as the pandemic COVID-19 has settled down. Our justification is very clear that the government is not stable since the majority was very slim. It will not be good for the economy. Investors may not have the trust and confidence until we have a fresh and clear mandate from the rakyat. And that's why we have been very consistent in asking for general election, provided that COVID-19 and the pandemic has settled down. Now, our focus is to address the concern of rakyat, especially how to resolve the issue of pandemic. So the question of general election is not arise at this particular point in time.
Dr. Ashraf, we will get into that consistency issue later on a little bit, because there's no denying that you can say that, UMNO has been consistent in wanting a general election after the pandemic and all. But that's not necessarily the case across the board, because even within UMNO, there are multiple factions who seem to be doing different things at any given time, right? But Howard, I'm wondering, did you think that some form of Lanka Sheraton would play out in some manner? Because yes, you can blame the defectors and all sorts of things, but there's also no denying that Pakatan Harapan was losing its popularity at the time, as Dr. Ashraf brought up earlier. The Tanjung PI by-elections was a huge defeat, and you said that Pakatan Harapan came to some form of an agreement on the eve of Lanka Sheraton. But did you realistically view a transition of power as something that was possible, something that was workable?
I think in terms of a transition of power, I think that I can only comment in the way that we leave it for those who are within that power play per se to comment on. It's not my place. But I think in reference to the election defeats, again, 22 months in, 20 months in, to suffer from a dip in popularity, with this, at that time, a new environment of democratization, people were cherishing the opportunity to voice out. And the fact that there were things that the people were not agreeable with or not satisfied with. And, I admit that we were admonished and chastised for some inability to instantaneously heal the decades-old inflammations and fractures of the nation's politics and economy. I don't deny that. But the fact is, we also can't deny that conservative forces that were deeply ingrained among the political elites as well as the masses, there were a string of public policy sabotages, which we now, in hindsight, can say and know were aided by those who defected. And that really did erode the public confidence towards the government.
Dr. Ashraf, I just wanted to quickly follow up with you. So clearly, UMNO supported this temporary configuration, this alliance between Bersatu, UMNO, and PAS. How are your feelings now? It's been a year. It's exactly a year. And what's the situation with UMNO and Bersatu? Perhaps you can clear the air. Is UMNO formally part of the Perikatan National Pact? Because we've seen mixed statements saying, okay, they're going to register, they're not going to register. Just recently, Bersatu sources have told several media platforms that Prime Minister Muhyiddin has invited UMNO to join Perikatan National, ahead of a potential GE15. So is UMNO part of Perikatan National or not?
Yeah, let me put things into perspective. I think by doing so, we have to look at the history. When UMNO, together with 11 other parties, including our BN components, MCA, MIC, and PBRS, agreed to eventually compromise to propose Tan Sri Muhyiddin as Prime Minister, the intention was very clear: to save the country from going into turmoil, since there was no single bloc which has clear majority, not only to form government, but also to decide on calling for dissolution. So we have compromised to form a loose coalition known as Perikatan Nasional. actually the person who coined that words is actually our president himself, Datuk Sri Zahid Hamidi, to propose Tan Sri Muhyiddin as prime minister. For UMNO, the principle was crystal clear that this is a partnership amongst member of parliament only, and it only effective until the general election, GE, period. So when PBBM Bersatu decided to register Perikatan Nasional as a party, yes, Tan Sri Muhyiddin consulted all the president parties in May, in May 2020. And UMNO, together with our component parties, MCA, MIC, and PBRS, as well as GPS, the coalition parties in Sarawak, agreed not to join as component parties of Perikatan Nasional if it is to be registered at that time, at that point in time. Meaning to say, we agreed to continue support PN government until this government dissolved for general election, but not be part as component in Perikatan Nasional as a new party. Beyond that, I need not have to comment. Let us see in the next coming months. Our political system is far too dynamic and change too fast. But as I mentioned, the situation now is UMNO is still in Barisan Nasional, not in Perikatan Nasional as a component party. So there's two different things.
Okay.
Supporting Perikatan Nasional as a government, because it was started by a loose coalition. But subsequently, when Tan Sri Muhyiddin decided to register it as a party, of course, Barisan Nasional, and also until today, parties in GPS, Sarawak, decided not to join as component party for Perikatan Nasional.
All right. On that note, we do need to go for a very quick break. On the show with us today are Dato' Dr. Ashraf Wajidi Dusuki, UMNO Youth Chief, and Howard Lee, Pera Assembly Person from Pasir Panji, and a DAP Youth Chief. And we are chatting about Langkah Sheraton's one-year anniversary. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan. Alongside me is Hazril Ashraf. So it's been 1 year since Langkah Sheraton, and that's exactly what we are discussing today with Dr. Ashraf Wajdi Dusuki, UMNO Youth Chief, as well as Howard Lee, Pera Assembly Person from Pasir Pinji and DAP Youth Chief.
All right. So, Dr. Ashraf, you've made it very clear that while UMNO supports the Perikatan National Government, that this loose coalition, that it is very much still a part of Barisan Nasional. But I just want to touch on this alliance between UMNO, PAS and Bersatu in terms of uniting Malays and Muslims, because that's a statement that PAS President Datuk Sri Awang has argued for, in favor of, that this coalition would unite Muslim and Malay voters. How would you respond to this, you know, grand idea, this grand vision? Is that something that you agree with?
Yeah, of course. Naturally, any Malay Muslim would agree to such an idea, because as for Malay unity, whether we like it or not, we have to accept the fact that UMNO and PAS, especially, are the two biggest Malay Muslim political parties in Malaysia, with history went back all the way to pre-independence. On that basis alone, I think the Malay Muslim unity, together with our new partner in this government, Bersatu, is slowly materializing, inshallah. Nevertheless, for me, we have to face the reality that this is a Malaysia which is characterized by its multiracial, multi-ethnicities, multi-religion and multicultural. This is our unique strength. As much as we want to make sure Malay Muslim as the core that need to be united, we cannot in any way forget undermine the fact that the success of this nation depend upon the unity of all races who actually determine the future of this of Malaysia as one nation. That's why we should not trying to focusing only on one dimension of this country. We have to look at a bigger picture. Of course, the core need to be strengthened. When I repeatedly mentioned about the core, this is the backbone of the country. Malay Muslims as the core, but in the reality of multiracial, multi-ethnicities that we are, cherishing for the past 70 over years of independence. So I think we have to put a stop trying to segregate, focusing only on one particular segment of the societies that need to be united. We have to, strive very hard to make sure at the end of the day, Malaysia belongs to everyone. This is our country. And in order to achieve that stability, peace and harmony, whether we like it or not, the fact remains we need to strengthen this pluralistic nature of our country.
Dr. Ashraf, I do have a follow-up on that, because what you eventually brought up there is a very noble idea, which I think many of us can agree with, right? We want to, it's not, Malaysia is not just for the Malays, but it's for all races, all ethnicities and whatnot. But when we look at the sort of branding of, let's say, UMNO PAS Alliance, and even to a certain extent Perikatan Nasional and all of that, there is a sort of assumption, or even maybe some truth to it, that, you know, that these are parties that are here primarily for the Malays, and every other race comes, you know, secondary. So it's a party or it's a coalition that is here to protect the rights of Malays and things like that. What would your response be? Because if you're trying to get the votes from non-Malays in Malaysia, what would you tell the non-Malays to convince them to vote for parties like UMNO, PAS, and so on and so forth?
First of all, let us be clear and put things into perspective. We have experienced 61 years, the government, the country under the leadership of Barisan Nasional. And Barisan Nasional is a model whereby UMNO is the dominant Malay Muslim party, which is a core that actually has multiple parties representing diverse races and ethnicities, including Sabahan and Sarawakians. And that has been the manifestation of the true model of Malaysia, and where we cannot deny the fact that we are having the multiculturalism, multi-religion, multi-races, but at the core of it is the Malay Muslims. The problem is when the structure started to be agitated and tried to be antagonized, and Malays started to be disunited into various parties. Before, only UMNO and PAS. And we know, historically proven and showed to us that UMNO and PAS, we were divided because of certain ideological orientation differences. But when the political come into place, especially post-1998, when Anwar Ibrahim was sacked and PKR was established, and later the further fractions within the Malay community into various parties, Amanah came into picture, and Bersatu as an offshoot of UMNO party. You can see how the structure becomes very loose and started to expose into huge risk in terms of instability. That's why this is not something which is new. Some people say history repeats itself. If you look at 1971, post 13 May 1969, our darkest moment of racial tension, what did Tun Abdul Razak did? Before he converted or transformed Perikatan, Parti Perikatan, into Barisan Nasional, the first thing that he did is to acknowledge the fact that the need to ensure the core Malay Muslims must be strengthened. That was when he decided to invite PAS to join Barisan Nasional. In the beginning, as a coalition partners to form government in Kelantan, and then subsequently in 1974, forming Barisan Nasional and PAS as one of the pioneering parties to be in Barisan Nasional. And when the core is strengthened, he indeed invited other parties, including Gerakan, who was known then as the most extremist or extreme in terms of their ideological, chauvinistic approach, but it can be united under Barisan Nasional. And we have successfully going through the periods on how we want to make sure the country remains stable in terms of politics, because once political is stable, then you can see how we can develop the country, economic prosper. We have even, we were known as one of the prominent Asian tigers at one time. Why? Because the ingredient is stability, peace and harmony. How to achieve that is to make sure the structure of this country remains intact. What is the structure? The core must be strengthened, meaning that the Malay Muslims, in the reality of multiculturalism, multi-ethnicities and multiracial.
All right.
Can I come in briefly?
Please, yes. Go ahead.
Of course, everything that, that Ashraf said just now, I would say that I agree with him at least 95%. But I think there's a
Thank you, Howard. Already A.
There's a slight difference in framing and also understanding, because I think we can hear at least in the first minute of his last intervention, it was kind of framed in a tone, in a frame of kind of hesitant and reluctant, I would say, tolerance. I would question, yes, the Malay majority nature of our nation is something that is factual, but what is stopping, whether it's Barisan Nasional ke Perikatan Nasional ke, what is stopping the core from being joined by all the different races? That's a question. And I think question number two, everything that was said by Ashraf is from the assumption that, especially on the point that the agitation and antagonization of Malay unity came when there were other political parties that came into the fold. But I think that that's based on an absolutely unacceptable notion that Malays and Muslim, number one, should be monolithic, and secondly, is monolithic. And monolithicism is not something that is inherent in human nature. Unity, yes, but monolithicism is never something that is natural to human beings.
Okay, I'm just going to gently cut in there, and I'd love to do a separate debate on the way forward for multiracial
Malaysia. I
think
this is a very important topic.
And it is.
We can have differing views, but actually, at the end of the day, I tend to agree with Howard, and because I did not in any way disagree with you, and I did not in any way mention earlier that strengthening the core is undermining other races. I did mention strengthening the core at the same time, acknowledging and try to unite all the races as characterized by Malaysia as a nation,
all right.
One nation.
All right, Howard, I just wanted to look at the opposition first, because today's Pakatan Harapan certainly is not the same one that won GE14. Bersatu is obviously out of the picture now. Tunam is in some ways going on his own way, as well as Syed Saddiq. He's starting his own, trying to start his own party, Muda. Has the relationship between the component parties within the main three parties of Pakatan Harapan, have they changed since Langkah Sheraton?
I think politics in general is often and always dynamic, and especially when it comes to power, especially when we're faced with the current triple crisis, the healthcare crisis, the economic crisis, as well as the political crisis that the nation has been dragged into. But I think that dynamicism requires a certain degree of consistency and continuity. And I've always been consistent myself. The DAPC has always been consistent, and DAP and Harapan has been consistent. I think the unity of the opposition as a block, and not just Pakatan Harapan, I don't want to use the term Pakatan Harapan Plus, but I think the opposition, the parliamentary opposition block, needs to be united. And I think I would love and I would want to see and continue to see Dato Sri Anwar Ibrahim as the opposition leader, not just to 92 Harapan MPs, but the entire block of whether it's 109, 110. But unfortunately, that cannot be parliamentarily tested because democracy is suspended. But unity of the entire opposition bloc is the primary objective.
Guys, our political scene right now is dominated by old men, you know, on both sides of the political aisle. Even when we look at Lanka Sheraton, it mostly revolves around people who have been front and center in our political scene for years, right? I mean, we're talking about Mohideen, Tun M, Anwar Ibrahim, Azmin Ali also to a certain extent.
And just to cut in, I mean, youth leaders like you were on the fringe of Lanka Sheraton. You didn't have a legislative role to play in all this, right?
Exactly. So do you think it's high time for more young people to get involved? Because it seems to me that a lot of the problems in Malaysia tie back to these so-called legacy celebrity politicians that's been here for years.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a time for us to move forward. And moving forward here, I mean, we have to bring out more young and fresh faces. Because as you correctly mentioned, we have been facing with all these seasoned politicians since our school days. And now, until today, the whole crisis and the whole problem still within these few personalities. And I think by having fresh and young faces, it doesn't mean that we inherit the old legacies and inherit whatever problems in the past, whatever rivalry that was happened in the past. But the most important thing, we have to come up with fresh ideas, because the most important thing, we may have differing views in terms of ideologies, political orientations, but most importantly, we share the same spirit, the spirit to see our nation to move forward as one nation. Moving forward as one nation with the ultimate objective that at the end of the day, what the riot wants, what the people want, what the young people and everyone wants. We want a stable society. We want a peace. We want harmonious society.
Howard, you have anything to add to that?
I think, you know, the reference to old men, I think there needs to be emphasis on both old and men. I think the key point, in actually also in response to Ashraf, the reality in our nation right now, the situation that we live in is where those who are keen to seize power are actually not interested in governing, and instead of focusing on preparing and pressuring for elections in a bid to return to absolute dominance at this critical time of the nation's and the people's survival, with ministers and politicians, it makes me sad, openly flouting rules and laws with impunity, yet ordinary citizens are punitively kind of punished for the same offences. With the pandemic right now spiraling out of control, you know, we're still seeing daily four figures in terms of daily numbers of infection and diagnoses, with the largest cabinet we've ever seen in Malaysia to sustain the kind of politics that we're in, to sustain this government.
Okay, but Howard, I just want to ask you, you know, when we talk about trying to regenerate the political landscape in the context of Undi 18 and regeneration, you know, there's going to be millions of new voters between the age of 18 and 21, and they will not be able to relate to Dato' Sri Anwar the way, you know, YB Fahmi Fazil can and you know, Rafizi. So if you had to choose a new younger leader from Pakatan Harapan, you know, who is capable beyond Dato' Sri Anwar?
What I said just now was I want Anwar Ibrahim to be the opposition leader to 109 or 112 MPs right now. Mm-hmm. And in terms of picking or choosing a prime minister right now, number one, I'm not an MP. Number two, that's a decision to be made by Majlis President and not me and me alone. But I think what is a good situation for us to be in right now is we've got so many good leaders within Pakatan Harapan who has governance experience.
Could you name a few that you think are capable?
I'll name several. Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim is one. Shafi Abdal is another one. Mat Sabu is another one. And there are lots and lots of different leaders And the fact is, that's for Majlis President Pakatan Harapan and the then government-in-waiting block of MPs who want to support our government to decide.
So I'm not necessarily asking you for your official endorsement. I just want to try to dig a bit deeper and see who under the age of 40 do you think, you know, is a capable leader, at least in the future, if not now.
Yeah, because the names that you just brought up, Anwar Ibrahim, Mat Sabu, Shafi Abdal, this doesn't exactly go against, yeah, I mean, this still is in line with everything we've been discussing, which is, you know, old men dominating the scene for years and years and years.
Well, under 40, I don't know. I think, you know, Sadiq has a bright future. That's certainly one. And it's going to be difficult for me to pick names who aren't, because at the end of the day, politics is about moving onto the ladder once you pass the post. You first need to be elected. And I think it will be unfair to set the expectations on anyone to become a prime minister before they're even elected. And those who are elected, I would say Sadiq is an option. Yeah, who knows? Anyone can be a prime minister as long as you can get the support of more than half of the MPs.
All right, I'm going to throw that similar question to you, Dr. Ashraf, because, you know, you earlier brought up that UMNO is very consistent in their messaging. Maybe they are internally, I don't know, we don't know, you know, things that are going, the rumblings that go on behind the scene. But when you look at the news cycle, this isn't the case. When it comes to the endorsement of Perikatan Nasional, one faction will say something and then, you know, another faction is trying to pull a stunt and, you know, put pressure. And there's a lot of these kinds of machinations going on, right? So what is the direction of UMNO heading into G15? Or better yet, if you had to name a potential prime minister candidate from UMNO, who would it be?
When I say the consistency, okay, we have to look into the decision of the party as a party rather than individuals. Because you have to look at the history of UMNO. UMNO is not shy from crisis on the various, having various factions and differences of opinion, starting from the way back from its first, when it was first established, when Dato' On having differences of opinion and he left the party until today. But the most important thing, what makes UMNO remain intact is the decision of the party eventually will consolidate everyone. That's why one way of criticizing UMNO's, whether they are consistent or inconsistent, is to look at the decision made by the Supreme Council or by the General Assembly. Because this is the ultimate platform that have the locus standi, that have the platform that can decide on the party's whatever policies, whether to support the budget, for example. And as you can see, before the budget was even debated in parliament, the differences of opinion, there are certain factions that say we cannot support it because of whatever reason. There are groups saying that, okay, we have to put certain condition. At the end of the day, when the Supreme Council members decided that we need to support the budget because of the people, and we laid down these are the conditions that we need to bring to the attention of the government. And at the end of the day, everyone must abide to and adhere to whatever decision of the party Supreme Council. That is how we have to put the right context on how to assess and make a judgment on whether UMNO is consistent or not. I need also to address whether UMNO having fractions, as I mentioned, and that is normal and common. I mean, the way how UMNO operates, it is a very democratic party. You allow people to have differences of opinion, but at the end of the day, Supreme Council as well as the General Assembly will dictate and determine the final decision. On the question, who will be the Prime Minister? We are political parties. Right? And I concur to what Howard mentioned earlier. Of course, even though I may have my own personal views, but at the end of the day, it's the party that will decide who will be the prime minister. And at this point in time, it's premature for us to speculate.
Okay.
Today.
Okay. So if Ashraf, one second.
Thank you, Howard. I hope you can get UMNO to give me one vote.
Tak boleh nak join.
All right, Dr. Ashraf, if you won't name a prime ministerial candidate, then who do you think is a capable leader in UMNO?
Hazrael, all this while, UMNO determines whoever to hold the premiership based on the party hierarchy.
Okay, so we're going to do a rapid fire series of questions because we have to move the interview along. I just want to quickly get your thoughts, Dr. Ashraf, on the withdrawal of support by two UMNO MPs, one of whom is, of course, Padang Rengas MP Datuk Sri Nazri Aziz. As the youth leader of UMNO, how do you view these withdrawals of support? I mean, you've made it very clear that ultimately it's the Supreme Council who decides on the party's direction, but clearly these withdrawals of support were made by individual MPs.
Remember, I did mention when we formed this government, what was the decision by the Supreme Council? The principle was very clear. It is a partnership amongst member of parliament only. It is not a coalition of party. It is a coalition that represented by the members of parliament. So, of course, this principle still remains. So, in other words, if the member of parliament decide to withdraw from the government, it is up to them unless the party decides otherwise. For example, when the party decides that all member of parliaments representing UMNO must support the budget, you can see that whether there were differences of opinion before or prior to the budget voting, eventually it turned out to be everyone must toe the line, toe the party line. So that is actually the principle taken by the party.
Okay, Dr. Ashraf. Let's talk about policy. Right, I want to get both your takes on it because how do you think the Perikatan National Government has done in terms of governance? Are there any policy initiatives that stand out to the both of you?
Of course, if you ask me as the youth chief, we have to play the role as check and balance. And for example, I disagree for us not to hold a parliamentary session because that is the bedrock of democracy. And that is the avenues for the representative of rakyat to check and balance on policies related to rakyat. Now, there are a lot of issues related to policies. We need that policies to be debated on behalf of rakyat. Otherwise, like what happened today, we have to use social media channel. Netizens have to play that role. Is it, healthy? It's not healthy, as if we don't have a system, democratic system. Even members of parliament in ASEAN countries are looking down at us. I feel humiliated as a citizen of Malaysia. That's why, for me, the new democracy have to be shaped in the mind of the people, especially the new and young generation.
And YB Howard?
A government that suspends democracy and the recourse to the public and the electorate and the rakyat's voice, i.e. the legislature, is indefensible. That's number one. Number two, the current government, everything that has been announced and rolled out and implemented that is seen to be acceptable should technically be within expectation and the norm. And quite frankly, most of it that is acceptable were well-received policies that were a continuation from the Harapan time. And most of the positive U-terms were also results of the opposition's pressure and lobby.
Just to follow up, are there any policies the government has rolled out that you think, on the flip side, that they have done well in addressing the rakyat's issues and economic issues and so on and so forth?
A continuation of the previous governments. Policy in terms of a call for a moratorium on loans and as well as the job support scheme. What started off as Malaysia at Work, Women at Work, Apprentices at Work, and it was just a kind of lackluster and haphazardly amended version of it.
Now, I think I want to add one thing.
Go on.
In terms of economic policy, because I feel very strongly that the government must not take the approach of austerity based policy. We have to be brave enough to spend in order to make sure the growth of economy continue, especially in the midst of a pandemic. The infrastructure development and all these mega projects is one of the ingredients, important ingredients in making sure the economy continue to grow. This is among the things that we have been saying and telling loudly to the government. You have to spend. Don't be afraid of even having to borrow money. In order for you to grow, you have to spend. And in order to spend, you have to have a clear policy and a progressive economic policy.
Right. Now, separately, the Perak political crisis was quite interesting. I'm speaking, of course, about the no-confidence vote against Dato' Sri Ahmad Faizal Azumu, the former Menteri Besar of the state. There were claims and reports that UMNO and DAP might have worked together to form a new state government, a very historic first. Do you two believe that UMNO and DAP could ever work together, perhaps form a new government in the future, whether it's on the national level or on the state level?
Can I just correct your question there? It was not a no-confidence motion tabled by the opposition or otherwise. It was a confidence motion tabled by an UMNO assembly person.
Yes, yes, the confidence vote, sorry, the confidence motion that was filed.
Absolutely. It would be nonsensical for the opposition, who was betrayed by the then Menteri Besar, to either support or even not support, not vote for the confidence motion. Because we have to come out in showing that we don't support the Menteri Besar. So Harapan, the opposition, was actually consistent and voting in our natural position, which is to vote against a confidence motion of the Menteri Besar. So that's the context. And number two, if you're talking about the prelude to the change of the Menteri Besar that was culminated by the vote, to say that there was a cooperation, I think that is disingenuous and incorrect at the very least. But what happened after there was a change, we realized there was an absolute need to rid the state of toxic politics. And the people at that particular juncture, the Perak economy, Perakin people, needed a stabilizer. And the fact is, we sat down and discussed. We came up with a confidence and supply arrangement. Not an agreement, but an arrangement that everyone agreed with, which culminated in a unanimous approval of the new Menteri Besar. So if that's something that is for the betterment of the people, something that brings political progress in an environment and at a time where there was regression everywhere in politics, I think that needs to be applauded. On both sides of the house, actually, both the opposition and the government, we are still a proud opposition. And if that is not to be applauded, I beg to differ that anything else can be applauded thereafter.
Okay, then humorous for a moment. Let's say both of you two are MPs. Would you work together in a future where you want to, you know, change the Malaysian political landscape? Dr. Ashraf, would you work with a YB Howard if both of you were in Parliament? Would you work together?
Yes, why not? Because working together doesn't mean that we have to be forming a coalition together. That's why I said the politics in future must change. Having different groups or different political coalitions, it doesn't mean that we cannot work together. And it has proven in Perak, in Johor, to the very least. I mean, on certain aspects, when we need to support the budget for the people of Perak, for example, DAP, PKR, PAN, Amanah, and all the parties actually supported it under the, as Howard mentioned, confidence and supply arrangement. So These are the things that we need to have. The people, Malaysia needs a new thinking, a new politics, that we can have differing views. We can be having different ideologies, political stand. But at the end of the day, there are also certain things that we have to agree upon. Agree to disagree and agree on certain things which has a direct benefit to the people.
Not unlike, and in fact, the same as former UMNO president and former Prime Minister Tun Razak, who was an avid and open Fabian socialist. Tun Razak was a socialist. I am a social democrat. I'm deeply ideological. I believe in governing from the center left. And anyone who is willing to sit down, discuss, and I quote, and one of the key thinkers in social democracy, the ideology of social democracy, Thomas Mai, actually wrote a book on it. Anyone can operate from a basis of comradeship, solidarity, freedom, justice, and compromise for the betterment of the people. I'm more than happy to work with.
All right. Before I let you gentlemen go, perhaps you can share a final message for young Malaysians who are listening in, the youth of today and, you know, future leaders of tomorrow, perhaps.
In Malaysia right now, with the state of emergency, the triple crisis, I think we can say that we are facing the darkest moment. And the only light that could come to save the situation are individual glimmers of hope coming together to rebuild a collective torch to light the path for a collective march towards healing of our nation in more ways than one. And spirit of negotiation, sacrifice, comradeship, consensus, and nothing less is required of all of us. Treachery and betrayal has no place in our nation and our politics, and you know, we should all be against it and must join hands in marching ahead together. And a year after the traitorous and treacherous Langkah Sheraton, we must live and learn.
Dr. Ashraf,
my last words. I think we have to take ownership of this country. Eh? Every one of us owns this country. This country, Malaysia, does not belong to any particular group. It does not belong to any particular political party. Don't let any group of people dictate us and try to dominate our mind as if we have to follow their ideology, especially when it does not in line with the spirit of this nation, the characteristics which we have discussed earlier in this segment. I always say, I always believe that we have to go back to our root. Malaysia is a multi-religious, multi-racial, multi-ethnicities and multicultural countries where we need to understand its history, we need to understand and appreciate its uniqueness, its characteristics, so that we can assume the rights and all the responsibilities to make sure that this country move forward in stable peace and harmony.
Dr. Ashraf YB Howard, thanks so much for speaking with us today, and please stay safe.
Thank you. Same to all of you. Thank you, Howard.
Happy New Year.
Everyone.
That was Dato' Dr. Ashraf Wajdi Dusuki, UMNO Youth Chief, and Howard Lee, Para Assembly Person for Pasir Pinji and DAP Youth Chief. And we were reflecting and looking back at Langkah Sheraton. Today marks 1 year since it happened. We reflected on the Perikatan National Government, and we looked ahead at their aspirations for Malaysia and the youth.
Yes, it's going to be a pretty thrilling, you know, next few months or so as we head into the next.
As everything remains fluid and dynamic.
Yeah, exactly. So if you missed any part of today's conversation or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or even subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. Once again, I'm Dashan Johan alongside Hezril Ashraf, and this has been Live and Learn on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.